Okay, we are going to get started. All right. So we are on week 6 of Christian Friendship. Next week, we're going to have a time of prayer again together. And the following week is Easter, in which, rather than Sunday school, we're going to have just a church breakfast here at the same time. That was only planned since, like, Thursday, when Darcy reminded us that we used to do that before COVID, and then we had stopped. So looking forward to that. And then we'll pick up again. We'll finish out on friendship through the month of April. And again, I've said this, Colin is going to start a series on finances then for the month of May, and that'll kind of end our year of Sunday school. I wasn't here last week, so I have an idea of what Bruce taught on. He didn't figure out the recorder, so I couldn't get to listen to it. Sorry. It was Nathan's fault. There you go. Nathan doesn't get much blame for anything around here, so maybe we can let him out.
Perfect.
It's better for me not to hear it. I can assume what he taught on, because I know what the chapter said, but kind of just counting on the fact that he said some of these things. We'll start this morning. Hugh Black says this about friendships. We have a few friendships because we are not willing to pay the price of friendship. The secret of friendship is just the secret of all spiritual blessing. The way to get is to give. Obviously, we can see from Jesus' life that was his premise for life. He gave and ultimately gave his own life for his friends, right? So, quick review then from last week. Bruce, I think, walked through marks of true friendship, and there were 6 of them. Can anybody name the marks of true friendship? Or at least one of them? Other than Bruce?
Consistency.
Consistency? Or he uses the word constancy, but same thing. So he was looking at covenantal friendship versus consumer friendship, right? What else?
Candor.
He calls that the rarest jewel of friendship, is an honesty with our friends. What else?
Trust.
That is the foundation of friendship. And I think, again, we can all understand how that's the case. The other ones then were affection. Looking at David and Jonathan, he loved him as his own soul. The next one was transparency, giving a clear view to our lives for our friends. And then the final one was seeing through their eyes, which is empathy, right? Maybe before we really get into this, I'll give you guys an opportunity to share any experiences in the past couple of weeks where either you or a friend has practiced one of these things that stood out to you in a way. Don't use names, probably, especially if it's yourself. But any examples? Yeah.
How we can thank each other.
Yeah.
I feel like that's very constant and empathetic.
Yeah. And for sure. Yeah. Sometimes I think maybe for us, we have to be more willing to recognize and see the graces that friends are giving us throughout the week, right? Like, most of us would probably sit here and not think much about that, but really that is a grace to us, that someone would check in on us. That might be normal to a lot of us, but we have to see that as a gift of God's grace to us, that's happening.
would say that ticks off a number of those boxes as well, too, right?
Yeah. Yep.
I have some, you know, friends are listening to a podcast at the same time, just like it's a series, and then listening to it, and then sharing with each other what their thoughts are, even being transparent about what they may struggle with, or what past hurts have been, or whatever, and that's been really encouraging to know what they're struggling with, and then praying for each other, same thing.
For sure. Again, that's like a normal life experience for probably a lot of us, but we have, again, recognize that's God's grace to us that that's happening. All right, so affection, constancy, transparency, candor, empathy, and trust. Out of those marks of true friendship, any of those that stood out to you or something that you struggle with? Or maybe, just an area you want to grow in any of those things. Maybe you're not interested in sharing. That would be transparency. And that's fine. This is different than this one-on-one conversations. Maybe as a... Who was that? Oh, go ahead.
I was going to say, the candor seems to be one that's easier to give than it is to take.
Yeah.
So the two problems being to take candor as much as you give it.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. Yeah, if we want to grow in friendships, we're going to have to learn how to take some of those things. And obviously, we have to be really careful with that, and we're going to talk about, some of those criticisms that we receive have to fall on a bed of a lot of encouragement in order for us to receive that well. That is something that I think probably all of us would say we have to grow in, is receiving that type of friendship with someone. Good. Maybe as a way to continue to apply these things, even take one of those things that maybe you struggle with, and make that a part of your prayer life in the next few weeks. Just recognizing maybe some of us have been hurt by friends, and it's hard for us to begin to trust friends and even apply that trust to Christ because we've been hurt so many times. So if that's something that you struggle with in trusting others, commit to praying for that for a while and growing in that. That's how it sounds almost like silly or basic, but that's how we grow as Christians. When we're struggling in an area, we commit to praying along those lines. And that is how one of the ways the Lord helps us to grow. I think Bruce probably also talked about a deeper bond and a distant horizon, saying you have more in common with a brother in Christ than you do with a blood brother. I mean, now if your blood brother is also in Christ, you have a lot in common with him as well. But I think that presses on some of us probably a lot, in that because of Christ, I have more in common with people in this church than I would ever with my actual blood siblings if they were apart from Christ. And that has to be true. That's what the Bible speaks of all the time. So Christ needs to be at the center of our friendships. If we're going to call it Christian friendship, if that is going to be distinct from friendship, then Christ needs to be at the center of friendship. And I would say, the Bible makes this clear, perseverance in faith requires Christian friendship. For us to persevere, we need the help of others. Whether that's our spouse, whether that's a friend, or whether that's both, I would argue we need one another for that. So this week, what we're going to see, or what we have seen, is that friendship necessarily takes a lot of work, right? All of these things we're recognizing, we're probably all rehearsing these things in our head and being like, oh, I don't have time for this, I don't have time for this, I don't have time for this, right? But we have to understand that friendship, other than with, six-year-olds, friendship rarely just happens. It's not going to happen. It takes a lot of work, right? A couple six-year-olds can go and play together on the playground, and all of a sudden they're best friends for like a week, right? Until someone you go and play with another six-year-old, and then that's your best friend. But that doesn't happen with adults. That's not how we work. So these things take a lot of work and commitment. And I recognize analogies are really cheesy, but sometimes they're super helpful. So in chapter 5, he titles this chapter Cultivating Friendship. And so he likens friendship to having a garden. All right. So for those of you who have planted a garden, you know that sometimes gardening is like trial and error. It takes years to establish a well-ordered garden. And usually, it's not just the fact that the soil needs to develop, but it's also the fact that we need to learn and grow on how to garden well. We're going to make mistakes. We'll fix those mistakes the next year and realize that we made more mistakes in our fixing of them, right? Until we get in the right routine and understand how gardens work, then we'll have a well-ordered garden. So the first year, you might be super excited, maybe liken it to having this class at church. You plant too much in the garden too close together. And what happens? You can't maintain your plants, right? It's disorganized. Everything's growing in every different direction, right? That could be a fault after taking something like this and just saying, well, I need to go out and just be friends with every single person, which is a good motive, right? But just not really. Okay, second year, maybe you plan a lot less. You organize it better so you have lanes to walk in, right? But the second year, weeds take over. And it just gets to be too much, too fast. You neglect the weeds because you didn't necessarily know you had to take care of them. You guys are all probably like, oh, I know to take care of weeds in a garden. But sometimes when you first start out, you just think it's not going to be that bad until the end and you realize, oh, I can't even pick what I'm looking for, right? So as you go more years in the garden, you start to learn things. You gain more wisdom. You learn that you have to put in a lot of effort to get a crop. You have to uproot weeds. And again, I know this is just a cheesy analogy, but it's helpful for us as we're thinking about friendships. Those are the same things that we have to do. We have to learn and grow in wisdom. We have to put in a lot of effort. And obviously, we have to uproot weeds. And again, I appeal to Jesus. What did Jesus do in his life? He grew in wisdom and stature, right? We wouldn't necessarily say that he had to like grow in his ability to be a good friend. But Jesus was growing and learning in his life. Obviously, he worked really hard, and obviously, he pulled a lot of weeds, right, in his disciples. So today is going to be the most practical of all the lessons we have so far. We're taking the principles that we're learning, and now we're starting to apply them. And I welcome your guys' feedback. I have a lot of examples, but I also welcome like how this is played out in your lives. Please share if you have good examples. So first of all, how do we apply wisdom? How do we apply the wisdom that we've been learning about friendship to now putting this into practice? First thing is to give your friends a promotion. Give your friends a promotion. So we've been trying to encourage you throughout this class as we're all hopefully recognizing that friendship has a prominence or a priority in the Bible, meaning that we need friendships. God's created us with this need, even before the fall of Adam. And so if you're thinking about a list of priorities in your life, one of the goals of this class is that friendship has now moved to the top of that list of priorities. Not to the very top, but within a lot of other high priorities in your life. I think the need that the Bible puts on friendship makes friendship a non-negotiable, is what I'm saying. It needs to be thought of in that way. And then one of the basic principles of human beings is we make room for what we treasure, right? That's how our lives work. If we treasure something, we are going to make room in it for it in our lives, no matter the circumstances, no matter how busy we are. If we treasure it, we will make room for it. And so the idea is here, I want us to treasure friendships so that we begin to make room for them in our lives. So we're giving our friends promotion. So I want to think about this in a very specific way as we're thinking about how we could do. Okay, go. Hebrews 12:1-2.
Therefore, since we are surrounded by so great a cloud of witnesses, let us also lay aside every weight and sin which clings so closely, and let us run with endurance the race that is set before us. Looking to Jesus, the founder and perfecter of our faith, for the joy that was set before him, endured the cross, despising the shame, and is seated at the right hand of the throne of God.
All right. Thanks, Jason. So this was really helpful to me. I'm sure I've mentioned it in a Sunday school class before, but I heard Piper talk about this verse in particular one time when the writer of Hebrews makes a distinction between sin and weight. Okay, so when we're running our race in the Christian life, he makes a distinction between we're supposed to lay aside every sin and every weight. Meaning, I would argue that that's meaning weight is not necessarily sin, but things that are keeping us back from running our race well. Okay, does that make sense? So, one, we should think in categories of sin. Let's make sure we continue to do that. But I don't necessarily think that that's what we're always struggling with here. We already are thinking in category of sin. But now let's start thinking in category of what are some weights that keep us from running our race well. And what does the writer of Hebrews say? What are we supposed to do with those? We're supposed to lay them aside, right? A runner is not going to run a race carrying weights on their hips or on their shoulders, right? It's not going to work for them. And in the same way, we are to lay aside these weights. So, I'm not trying to be prescriptive here or giving you a law that is over and against the Bible. But we have to understand that it is our responsibility to lay aside weights so that we can run our race well, and we understand that running our race well requires friendship. It requires relationships. Meaning, we have to give some things up, right, in order to cultivate friendship. So, first, some of the weights that maybe we often think about, I think I can say this safely, but if you spend 5 hours in your week watching TV or movies, I would argue that that is a weight that you should be able to start giving up a little bit more for the priority of friendships. If you're saying, if you don't have friendships, but you have 5 hours to give to watching TV or movies, I think it's reasonable for a Christian to say, consider giving some of that up so that you can cultivate friendship. That's just one example of many. Again, I'm not saying it is necessarily sin to watch 5 hours of TV or movies in a week. But if it's keeping you from being able to develop friendship, if it's keeping you from being able to read your Bible and pray because you're giving time to that and not those things, then we are called as Christians to give those things up, right? To lay aside the weight. But then the second category of weights could be things that we would all say are better, or things that the Bible also prescribes for us to do, right? So work or family, exercise, like caring for our bodies, right? I think even ministry can sometimes fall into this category. Those things can be weights that keep us from running our race. Even though they're good things, we can put either too much of a priority on those things, or we just are busy people, right? We have a lot of things that are priorities in our lives that we have to take care of. So, one, if you are a workaholic, just stop being a workaholic. Sometimes the antidote to being a workaholic, and I'm guilty of this, is recognizing that the Lord gives us time. He gives us sufficient time for the things that we need to do. And we can't be anxious about not having enough time for those things. He gives us what is sufficient for us, right? Same thing with exercise, and same thing even with family. Sometimes we put so much of a priority on family that we disregard everything else that is good in our lives, right? So some of us may need to lay aside some of those things a little bit. Others of us, though, maybe ask the question, how can I redeem those activities? How can I redeem those activities. Maybe you can't cut out work in your life, right? Most of us can't cut out work in our lives. We shouldn't, as parents, cut out family. We shouldn't cut out our kids in our lives to go and develop friendships. We shouldn't cut out exercising or caring for our bodies to develop friendships. But how can we redeem those things? How can we maybe kill two birds with one stone, right, in thinking of those things? So here's some examples. Again, this is not prescriptive, but just examples for us to think. I have a friend who just quit, and he had the ability to do this, just quit a very well-paying job in order to take a less well-paying job in order to work alongside one of his friends who he also goes to church with. Because he realizes that relationship is more important to him than the money he can earn in his job. Not all of us can do something like that, right? He's able to still support his family. But that's a pretty radical thing to do, is to recognize it is going to be most beneficial in me running my race to be alongside this brother more often in my day. And this is one of the ways that I can do that. So that would be a way we could redeem our work, if that's possible. Okay? I would say all of us have different ideas, and this is fine, of how much time we should be spending with our family in the week versus with friends or doing other things. And that's fine. We should all have different ideas of that. I'm not trying to say that we should all think the same way in that area. But keep in mind that there's ways to build friendships as a family, and it doesn't have to just always be individually. Okay? But you can develop friendships as a family. So maybe for you, you feel like you don't have time to get with someone one-on-one. But maybe what you do as a family is pick another family in the church that you commit to spending a lot of time with in the next half a year to a year, and start to develop that friendship as a family, where your kids are friends, your husbands are friends, wives are friends, right? And work at it that way. If you're going to serve someone in the congregation, bring someone else alongside with you. That's how we're redeeming our time. We would all say that it is right for us as members of a body to go and serve one another. But that doesn't mean we need to exclude doing that with other people. So just call someone up and bring someone alongside of you. Invite someone to exercise with you. I don't exercise that much, confession. But I know there's a lot of people in our church that do. And you can maybe align schedules in a way that you could meet at the gym once a week to exercise together or go for a run together, whatever people that exercise like to do. All right. Anybody have an example of this, of redeeming our time in order to cultivate a friendship? Or even an example of something that you would maybe like to do, you just haven't done yet.
We have been a consistent group life, but in the summertime, we like to go hiking on Saturdays when we're able to. And so, trying to invite another family, we've really bonded with other people. Another friend asked us to collect special beer, watch over, and we got to know them all in that way.
And you're spending time with family. So you're developing friendships as a family and also individually, right? So it sounds like the Navani's just invited anybody on a hike with them every Saturday this summer.
We did a couple summers, like have like a Facebook group and just say,
yeah,
we told people we're just going on Saturday. So
yeah.
It wasn't as successful as we hoped.
Maybe this summer after this. Awesome. Thanks, Colin. Any other examples? All right.
It's kind of a stretch, but it's because it's not a one-on-one thing. But as a church, we've made it a habit to help people move. And there have been a lot of friendships that have developed just over people getting together, over serving one another in that way. So you get to know somebody that way, and that friendship just develops. And we've got a number of people that develop friendships just from that.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, I mean, you really get to know someone when you're carrying a piano with them. And when you've gotten to do that 5 weeks in a row, it's for a while in our church, there was someone moving.
Work out.
Yeah. There you go. So either work out or just...
With pianos.
With pianos, yeah. All right, applying wisdom, number two. Take a dose of realism. So I think the first wrong way to take this class is to sit here and say, well, I already have a lot of great friendships. I don't need any more. And that can be true to an extent. Like, we have to be careful that we're not trying to overextend ourselves. But also recognize it is our responsibility, I would say, as Christians, to befriend people. To have a category in our heads to welcome more people into our lives. Again, we can't set a number on how many friends that we should have. But at least be willing to consider, if you know someone is lonely or hurting, consider figuring out ways to befriend that person. That is our Christian duty to do so. Even if you feel like you are already overextended, figure out a way, either yourself or find someone else in the church that you know that has more time than you, and figure out a way to help that person. That's our duty as Christians. Then the flip side of that would be, again, what I said earlier, is to take this class and say, I'm going to be friends with every person here. Which, if you can do that, that's great. But most of us can't, right? Most of us can't develop the deeper friendships that we're seeking to develop. So take a dose of realism. And this happens with any topical class, right? You have a topical class on prayer, and what happens? The next 3 weeks, people are spending 10 hours in prayer a day, right? Because they're convicted. And eventually you just realize, like, maybe you can't maintain that. And the principle is what you need to learn to apply, not the practical, necessarily, outworkings of those things. Yeah.
Going back to your idea a few weeks ago of the concentric circles, I feel like we should be able to assume that everyone in this room and everyone at church is in our outer circle. Always progressing toward the inner circle. And we can't only focus on one family, but I understand, you know, the idea of intentionally one family at a time, but every time we meet on Sundays and chat one more time, then I feel like it's moving us closer in those circles. So it's not that we have to single in on one or feel like, oh, they've already got a close friend.
Yep.
But those circles can be enriched and can always be, the outer circle can always get bigger.
Yeah, for sure. Definitely. Yeah, I mean, back to the garden analogy, right? When you first start a garden, do people still look at seed catalogs as anything like that? People said that. But like, you look through the seed catalog, you're like, oh yeah, I want that, right? Because you're excited about it, and then you realize you get the seeds, and you're like, oh, I only have this much space in my garden, and this isn't going to actually work, right? All right, on applying wisdom, number three, you don't make vows, but you kind of do make vows, is what he's trying to say. So we've talked a lot about this idea of covenant with someone, right? And we're not saying that you are making a covenant to a person like you are making a covenant in marriage. That would be a misapplication of this class, right? The marriage covenant is something different than the covenant we're trying to describe here among friends. But we should treat our friends as if we are in covenant with them. Okay? Does that make sense? We can all make those connections in our head. So we're not giving our friends a friendship ring, although if that's helpful to you, I guess have at it. What's that? Yeah. Mark doesn't want a friendship ring, so don't do it. We're not like calling everybody up to have it. Maybe at the end of this class, what we should do is have like a ceremony where we like pair up friends up front here, right? Would that be good idea? No? Okay. We're not doing that, but we have to understand that the Bible describes friendships as a responsibility of ours to maintain. It is our responsibility to seek to maintain friendships. We would never say things like this if we didn't actually think that there's a deep commitment to friends. And we've all heard this. I thought we were friends, right? We would never say that if we didn't believe that friendship is actually this deep commitment. Or, I could never do that to one of my friends. Again, we would never say that if we didn't already believe this to be true. Okay? This idea of a covenant is why it hurts then much worse to be hurt by a friend rather than an enemy. Psalm 55, 12 to 13. For it is not an enemy who taunts me, then I could bear it. It is not an adversary who deals insolently with me, but it is you, a man, my equal, my companion, my familiar friend. All right. Esther Edwards Burr, who's Jonathan Edwards' daughter, said, I look on the ties of friendship as a sacred. It ought to be a matter of solemn prayer to God, where there is a friendship begun, that it may be preserved. And so I just ask you, do we regularly pray that God would continue to preserve our friendships? And that God would help us develop new friendships and pray for our friends? All right, number four on applying wisdom. Realign your expectations. Okay, so this is maybe even like the flip side of this idea of covenant, in realizing that some friendships are going to really work and some are just not. How life is. Maybe you view someone as a good friend, but you start to get the impression that they don't view you in the same way. That's a really hard thing, right? Or maybe the opposite is true. Maybe where you don't view someone as that good of a friend, but you're starting to notice that they view you as a really good friend. So friendship, as much as we want to say it's covenantal, or it should be covenantal, it's also fluid. Like, things change. Seasons change as we're going about in this life, and we have to just understand that and seek as best we can to recognize that and continue to walk in that fluidity, so to speak. So applying wisdom, we need to give our friends a promotion. We need to take a dose of realism. We don't make vows, but we kind of do. And realign our expectations. So then the next question is, how do we put in the work for these good friendships? Don't think that this is going to be rocket science. Don't think you're going to probably get any kind of new ideas. You probably already have in your heads how to put these things into practice, right? Sometimes we just don't like to apply those things, is more so the case. When someone asks you, not all the time, but when someone asks you how to read the Bible, right, oftentimes they already have it in their heads, an idea of how to actually read the Bible. It's just, we ask that question more so because we're not willing to put into practice what we think we're supposed to do. And the same thing goes with our friendships, right? We already have a lot of these ideas. I'm not going to give you any new crazy ideas here, I don't think. But sometimes we just need to be challenged to put these things into practice. So how do we put in the work? There's six ways here. One, we talk face-to-face. Okay, we've talked about this already. Thomas Goodwin says, mutual communion is the soul of all true friendship, and familiar conversation with a friend has the greatest sweetness in it. So it might be helpful to think about communication like this. Texting or emailing, right? Not necessarily bad things, but most often texting or emailing should be used in order to sustain friendships, not deepen them. Okay, does that make sense? So, like, figuring out details of a schedule or whatever, we should use texting and emailing, so not face-to-face conversation, to sustain or maintain our friendships, not try to deepen them through that. So if you're trying to send a text to someone and you realize, oh, I'm actually trying to do this as a way to deepen our friendship, stop texting and pick up the phone and call them or get with them face to face. Again, we can send an encouraging text sometimes and that's all that we can do. But start to think in these categories. I think it'll be helpful. A phone call It's best if they're not required to deepen our friendships, but they can deepen our friendships, right? We get more personality than a text when we call someone and talk to them on the phone. And then obviously face-to-face and eye-to-eye conversations are what are going to really deepen our friendships. John, 2 John 12 and 3 John 13 to 14 say basically the same thing. Though I have much to write to you, I would rather not use paper and ink. Instead, I hope to come to you and talk face-to-face so that our joy may be complete. So John didn't want to have to write to these people, but he had to. He preferred to come and see them face-to-face. Why? So that their joy may be complete. All right? Speaks to this need. And I'm going to take the moment to challenge the men in this class, because I think probably the women are maybe a little bit better at the phone call thing and the face-to-face conversation than the men are. That's broadly speaking, okay? Most of us men are not picking up the phones and talking to our friends on the phone for a half hour. We don't really think in categories like that. But maybe we need to start to think in categories like that, right? A lot of us, I don't anymore, but a lot of you have long drives to town, right? Take that time to pick up the phone and call someone rather than continuing to just feed yourself. That's a good challenge for me. I often will listen to things rather than take the time to develop friendship when I'm on a long drive. All right? I think that's the kind of the radical relationships that we're called to as Christians. This is my favorite analogy in the entire book. This one just really makes me laugh. I have to read it. And it, again, really cheesy, but it's super good. If you fish, you'll appreciate this. Every one of us should have a few trusted confidants to whom we've granted full access to the full truth about us. Here's what I mean. Each of us is like a lake, with both shallow areas and hidden depths. We can open the shallows to public fishing, but we should also have a few trusted friends who can access the deeper parts. We explain to them the terrain, and we give them a license to fish there. All right? Kind of cheesy when I read it. I laughed for a while. But it's really helpful, right? We have shallow areas that we can let a lot of people into, and then we have deeper areas that we need to allow friends into in order for us to develop. So getting practical then on this. Here are some practical examples of how we can do this. As you're going to meet with someone, think about questions that you can ask them. Okay? What's something that you can find out about them? How can you encourage them? Schedule a meal or coffee with someone regularly. So meet with someone regularly. It's discipleship, a mutual discipleship. Read the Bible together. Talk about spiritually significant topics, like what are you reading? How are you discipling your family? Sermons. How are you encouraged or discouraged in your faith? A doctrine someone's wrestling with. If you're not used to doing this, it's going to feel really awkward to do this. But let's just all decide now that we're willing to do that, right? And it won't be as awkward. Use your drive home from work or the store to catch up with someone on the phone. Those are all practical ways we can do this. If you're planning to read a book in the next half a year, buy a couple copies of that book, give the other copy to a friend, and ask them to read it. You don't necessarily have to commit to meeting together weekly to go through it, but at least you're reading the same things so that when you are together, you can talk about them, right? That's just a helpful thing. All right, second thing, doing things side by side. It's very similar to what we just talked about with face-to-face. John Stott says this, when someone asked him what makes him feel most alive, he said, public worship, enjoying nature, and human friendships. I'm grateful to have many friends and very grateful to have the opportunity to enjoy their friendship and to do things with them. So we've already talked about this a lot here. But think about ways that you can redeem your time to do something face-to-face. If you just have to watch the game, there is absolutely no reason that you can't do that alongside a friend, right? I think I'm allowed to share this because I don't think this is embarrassing to Amanda at all. I didn't ask her, but there's been times on a Saturday morning where she just has to run a lot of errands. And there's other moms in the church that likely have to run a lot of errands, and they're likely doing that on a Saturday morning, right? Because that's what we often do. So every once in a while, she'll call up a friend and say, hey, I have to go to this place, and this place. Where do you need to go? And they'll meet up somewhere, and they'll just drive around to those places together and do that together. That's just this really practical way to make this happen. You're all trying to do the same thing, so why not just do it together rather than separate? And run into each other in those same stores. It just makes sense. He says in this book, I think this is a good idea if you can pull this off, develop an annual tradition where you get away with a friend or two or a few friends on a weekend. Figure out ways that you can do that and do that annually. And if you're married, you're going to have to figure out how to work together as spouses to make this a priority for the other person. So if you're a husband thinking that your wife doesn't have any friends and you want them to have friends, the first thing you need to do is to be able to make time for your wife to have friends. Okay? So you might have to sacrifice a little bit for that. Next thing, eating around the table. This is something that I don't know that I really understand, but in the Bible, most big events happen around a table or around food, right? There is a prominence of food in the Bible, and again, I don't know that I understand why that's the case, but it is the case, right? And most of us in our experiences, things happen around food. Like, my family owned a diner in Pennsylvania for most of my years growing up, and there was a lot of relationships that were forged through the act of service and food and sitting at the counter with customers that come in daily and developing friendships with them, right? There's something about food that makes conversation more naturally happen, right? Maybe it's just because it makes you stay there. I don't know. But covenant, oftentimes when there's covenants being ratified in the Bible, it's happening around food. Jesus was at the wedding feast, right? The Lord's Supper around food. What's going to happen in the end? It's the marriage supper with the Lamb, right? All of this is how the Bible speaks. And so maybe start to work at figuring out ways to develop friendships around food. I don't know. Pick a breakfast slot each week and invite a different friend to join you. Make a pot of soup on Saturday so you can invite someone over randomly for lunch after church on Sunday. Soup is, I just said soup because it's the easiest thing to have available on a Sunday. Keep one evening open each week to invite someone for dinner. I know that might challenge some of us here a little more than in others, but I'd really challenge you to begin having people over for dinner. I know it sounds like a lot of work. If you are a mom with young kids, it probably sounds like even a lot more work. But Chris and Peggy Sue taught us this, taught Amanda and I this very early on. No one is offended when they come over and you have Costco pizza sitting on the table. Unless maybe they can't eat the pizza, then figure out a different food. But all of us would say, for some reason we think that we can't serve our guests something like that. But all of us would say, if I went over to someone's house, I would not be offended at all if someone decided that it was easier for them that day to buy pizza, and I'm just thankful to be there, right? So learn how to make this happen. And I would say, you're starting to teach your kids that as a family, you can do ministry together. Our kids, I don't want to use a ton of personal examples here, but our kids thrive in when we have people in our home. They love it. And it's something we're doing together as a family. And it doesn't feel like I'm missing out on family time because we're hosting these people together, right, rather than apart. Last thing I think here, encouraging from the heart. Proverbs 18:21. Death and life are in the power of the tongue. So he makes the case in his book that encouragement is relational oxygen. Encouragement is relational oxygen. Friendships thrive when the atmosphere is thick with encouragement. But when the atmosphere is thin, lacking encouragement, or it could be thick with criticism, your friendships will wither and never get off the ground. Paul is a great example of this in his letters. In Romans 16, he greets 28 people by name in Romans 16, which has to mean that he's developed relationships with these people. Okay? He thanks Prisca and Aquila, who risked their necks for his life. He calls Phoebe a servant, Mary and Persis hard workers, Apelles approved in Christ. He calls four of them beloved. Right? So Paul understands this. Right? Encouragement. Here's another quote here. This is challenging, I think, for me. Maybe it doesn't feel normal to look your friend in the eye and say why you respect him or her, but it should. Whenever something feels upside down, we might ask, is this upside down or am I? Affirmation will feel out of place in a relational culture where sarcasm, competition, and comparison are the norm. Right? So we might all be sitting here and say, oh, it's just going to feel really weird to encourage my friend, to say something like out of the blue encourages. Right? That's not a problem with encouragement. That's a problem with yourself, is what he's saying here. And so this is our responsibility to encourage one another. So again, getting practical. Whenever the thought crosses your mind to affirm something about someone, do it, and do it without hesitation. Before you say goodbye, make it a practice with a friend to share why you are thankful for them. When you mention someone in conversation, create the habit of adding a comment about why you respect them. Keep track of friends' birthdays and send them an encouraging note. Those are all just really practical things that probably make us all a little bit uncomfortable, at least some of us, but those are our responsibilities as a Christian, is to encourage one another. So last then, using the garden as the analogy, uprooting weeds. And we're just going to go through these things fast here. How do we uproot weeds in ourselves and help uproot weeds in our friends? Also, the first one is when your blessing sounds like cursing. All right. So inconsiderateness is a weed that you need to uproot in your garden. Proverbs 25:20. Whoever sings songs to a heavy heart is like one who takes off a garment on a cold day, like vinegar on soda. Okay? So when your friend is in despair, it is not always helpful to be the person that comes in and says, oh, I just tried to do that to cheer you up. Right? Like, empathize with them, sympathize with them in their weakness. Yes, we want to encourage them and try and build them up and encourage joy in their heart. But sometimes being loud and obnoxious in a moment like that is not that helpful, right? It's inconsiderate. Proverbs 27:14. Whoever blesses his neighbor with a loud voice rising early in the morning will be counted as cursing. I think we all understand that. All right. This is a hard one to reconcile with. Proverbs 25:17. Let your foot be seldom in your neighbor's house, lest he have his fill of you and hate you. So we have to do these things within balance, right? We all have capacity. Some of us are not going to want you just walking in their house at all hours of the day. And some of us would like that a little bit more. I know there's people in the church that would say their door is always open and they're not going to invite you over, but they want you to show up. And that's confusing to me, but that's how people live. So we need to learn how to love our friends well and however they think about these things. Next one, how not to sharpen your friends. So turn over to Proverbs 27:17. This is a familiar passage to us. It says, iron sharpens iron, and one man sharpens another. And so I think all of us, including myself, And I think I still probably would interpret this passage in this way, but I want to at least make the point. So all of us would read this as two brothers sharpening one another, building one another up, right? That's how, it's like what every men's conference is named in the world, right? Iron sharpens iron, okay? But the footnote in the ESV says that this actually reads, and one man sharpens the face of another, all right? And in Proverbs, the rest of Proverbs, when parts of a face sharpen, it's a warning to look out. Okay? The rest of the book of Proverbs, when someone's face is sharpened, it's actually a warning to, like, stay away from that person. Right? Sharp eyes glare like a dagger. A sharp tongue speaks words like sword thrusts. And so I think we have to, whether we agree with that interpretation or not, I think the principle is true, right? If we are not careful with our words, we can actually sharpen our friends towards us, right? Ron Guy says this, just as a hard iron hammer pounds soft iron into something sharp, ready for battle, in the same way a man causes his neighbor to go on the attack. So the principle is that our words matter. Like, our words really, really, really matter. If you read James, you'll realize our words really matter. Proverbs 12:18. There is one whose rash words are like sword thrusts, but the tongue of the wise brings healing. And I challenge us to think, not necessarily in rash words or angry words or yelling, but also in categories such as thoughtless critiques, passive-aggressive responses, sarcastic remarks. Those are all things that are much more normal to our lives than necessarily going and just yelling at our friends. Hopefully, they are. None of those things, though, fits the standard of Ephesians 4:29. Let no corrupting talk come out of your mouths, but only such as good for building up as fits the occasion, that it may give grace to those who hear. So what Paul is teaching us in Ephesians is that we are only supposed to speak words that build others up. Those are the only words we're allowed to speak as Christians, is words that build others up. That doesn't necessarily mean we can't correct someone. That is building someone up, right? But this is such a good principle for us, and I think really challenging to us in our day where often friends live a life of just constant sarcasm with one another and tearing one another down. I think the Bible teaches us here that we are only supposed to speak words that build one another up. Destroying friendships with a whisper is also pulling the weeds. Gossip, we all know this, but need to be constantly reminded of this. And I think constantly reminded of this. Proverbs 16:28, a dishonest man spreads strife, and a whisperer separates close friends. Close friends, though in the Hebrew, this is like the ultimate, the maximum way you can describe friends in Hebrew. In Hebrew is how we translate close friends. So even gossip and a whisper is what puts a wedge in between close friends. All right? And all of these, we'll close with this, fall under the category of the soil of self. It says, all of these weeds find nourishment in the soil of self-focus. We speak and act inconsiderately when we don't pay attention to the emotions of others. We cause strife when we care more about self-expression than a peaceful relationship. We spread a bad report about someone because we care more about advancing our own reputation than damaging our friends. Our hearts default to a posture of self-focus. All right, we'll end with that and I'll pray for us. Father, thank you again for this time. Thank you for what your word says about friendships. I pray that we as a church would be committed to deepening friendships. God, even over the next couple weeks where we're not going to be talking about this in the Sunday school hour, I pray that we would keep these things on the forefront of our minds, that you would correct us where we need to be corrected, that we would be willing and humble to ask a friend how we need to be corrected in our lives, in our Christian walk, and that we would learn to grow in Christ. I pray that you would bless our time worshiping you this morning. In your name, amen. Thank you.